This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, March 13th, 2009. I'm Caleb Brown. Setting a national drinking age definitely conflicts with federalism, but does it even work to reduce highway fatalities? Jeffrey Myron, a senior lecturer in economics at Harvard University, says the evidence bears closer scrutiny. His article on minimum drinking ages is in the forthcoming issue of Regulation Magazine.
Regulation of drinking ages started in the early 1930s after alcohol prohibition had been repealed. There was, of course, not really anything before then because we did not simultaneously have legal alcohol and any widespread use of cars until the early 30s. So states at that point mainly adopted minimum legal drinking ages. Some were 21, some were 20, some many were 18. And that situation persisted with those laws for about 30 years or so. In the mid-60s or late 60s, a number reduced their legal drinking ages to 18 from 21, where a number had been. And then that lasted without much change at all until the mid-1980s. In the mid-1980s, there was an act of Congress signed by Ronald Reagan that said states could not get their federal highway funds from the federal government unless they raised their minimum legal drinking age from 18 to 21. And there was a Supreme Court case about it. Court ruled that the law was constitutional, so within about 3 years, every state had raised its drinking age from 18 to 21 if it was not already at the 21 level.
Now, there are several studies out there that say that these minimum drinking ages, or setting the minimum drinking age to 21, has yielded some benefits in terms of lowering highway fatalities for young people, and you think that they're missing something in the way in which they study that. What are they missing?
Right. So the main thing I think that they've missed is that a lot of those studies tended to focus on the early years when these changes were occurring and put much less emphasis on the changes that occurred after 1984 when the federal government imposed this law on everyone. We separately examined the impact of such laws both before and after the federal compulsion. And what we find is that the only area where there's any evidence for efficacy of the law are states that adopted a higher drinking age on their own without any federal compulsion. That the states where the feds forced a state to raise its drinking age, there's no evidence of any beneficial reduction in traffic fatalities. Even in the early adopting states, the evidence is fairly weak and fairly short term. But at a minimum, we conclude quite strongly that it's only when a state chooses a higher drinking age on its own, it's only when it decides it's going to devote enforcement resources and when there's public sentiment to support that, that you see those sorts of beneficial effects. When you try to impose something like that from on high, having the federal government push it on states, you don't see any beneficial effects in terms of reduced traffic fatalities.
Okay, well, what about this argument that if states are allowed to set their own policy with regard to something, we're talking about cars, people cross state borders all the time in cars, that there would be a race to the bottom, that is, regulations would be driven perhaps more by economic concerns than concerns of highway fatalities?
Well, there may well be a general pressure to reduce it. Clearly, some states, at least back in the 1980s, wanted to have a lower drinking age. Of course, that would be beneficial for those states that can do so without seeing any negative effects, and our evidence would suggest that lots of states can do that. There's nothing to prevent individual states from differing, even if there's some pressure from other states. We had a lot of heterogeneity, a lot of differences across states in the minimum legal drinking age for decades and decades. There wasn't a general race to the bottom or everybody adopting the lowest possible age. And so I think that argument is just not empirically consistent with the evidence, and it doesn't recognize that it may be beneficial for states to have a lower drinking age. First, those people who drink responsibly are able to do so. In addition, there's clearly some hint out there that this high drinking age basically makes a mockery of the law, that it pushes young people, college-age people in particular, to drink very heavily when they do drink because it's somewhat harder to get access, and so the law has contributed to binge drinking, to the glamorization of alcohol, to the forbidden fruit aspect. And so we may be having some serious negative side effects in addition to not having any evidence that we're actually reducing fatalities.
What movement do you see afoot to return to an era of allowing states to set their own policies?
Well, I don't think it's strong yet, but the main effort is something being led by a group called Choose Responsibility. It's a nonprofit organization that believes we should let people of 18 and older make their own decisions about alcohol, and that on average they would make more responsible decisions than we're giving them credit for. They have something called the Amethyst Initiative, which is a general campaign to try to convince college presidents in particular, but others more broadly, to reconsider the current law and to think about allowing states the freedom to choose what policy they want individually rather than having the federal government impose one minimum legal drinking age on everyone.
Jeffrey Myron is a senior lecturer in economics at Harvard University. His forthcoming article on legal drinking ages is in the spring edition of Regulation magazine. You can subscribe to Regulation at cato.org.